Here we go. Let's chaz at the bottom of Chav Chesem and Aleph, where the Gemara said, Nashim Avadim and Kitanim are exempt from Sukkah, and the Gemara wanted to know how you know that. So all of us, being the betting men that we are, so we would have said, well, because it's a mitzvah asay shazman grama, and women are exempt from mitzvah asay shazman grama. Right, Shifra? Right. So the Gemara doesn't answer that, and this is a Tanur Rabbanan Ezrach. Kala Ezrach bi Yisrael Yish Masukais. Plus it says all of the guests or something, Ezrach, visitors, I don't know. All of the Ezrachs in Israel shall dwell in Sukkahs. Had it only said Ezrach, okay, that's one thing. Ha Ezrach, lehoitzias anashim. The Ezrach seems to be, you know, focusing on a particular one, which would exclude something. So the assumption is it's excluding women. So that would be the way that I would read the Gemara. That, I mean, maybe even the pasuk. That if I would tell you that guests are chayav in Sukkah, why would you have to say ha Ezrach? Ha Ezrach. So the Ezrach sounds like it's this one as opposed to a different one. In other words, what I'm trying to say is, do you think that a hey, which is a hey yidya, is more likely to include something or exclude something?
Exclude.
Machlokes. As opposed to something else,
a
right?
A guest in general.
Josh, you disagree? You're not sure?
I just spoke live and he just
Rob, but if you look at the context of Ha Ezra,
yeah.
Kol Ha Ezra Kishru Sukkot.
Yes. And therefore what?
Kol Ha Ezra. So
Kol.
So if you say Kol Ha Ezra,
yeah.
It could be including everybody.
But I'm saying he could have said Kol Ezra, right?
Kol Ezra. Right, but they call Ha Ezra.
So it sounds like you're saying all of a particular segment.
Thank you.
But not all segments, no?
No, no. It's inclusive.
The kol is inclusive.
But what's the hay doing?
The hay is coming to include everybody.
Why? How does that make sense?
I don't know. It's my thought process.
Okay.
How does excluding?
Can we
restart? So, that's how the Gemara begins. The Gemara begins by assuming that Ha Ezrach is an exclusion, and it would exclude women from Ezrach. Ezrach would mean Jews, and Ha Ezrach excludes women. Had it not been for the hay, then what? Women would have been included. Yeah? Now, is that because... Why does the Torah have to say anything? Kol Ezrach. Why say anything? Kol Ezrach. Like, just say. There's a mitzvah sukkah, you know. So maybe it's trying to say that women should have been included, and that's why we need a special exclusion. So what's going on? So there's something confusing happening right away. But in any case, so the Gemara says, Kol Ha Ezrach B'Yisrael, L'Hoytiyas Anashim Exclude Women. That's how you know that women are not chayiv in sukkah. But it says kol, as you would have pointed out. Kol L'Rabbis is a Ketanim. Kol includes something. All. So all of Ezrach, which means all of the Ketanim, are also obligated. So does that mean all of the males, but not the females?
What do you mean? The Ketanim?
Yeah. Only the males?
I don't think it makes a difference, because if Nashim's excluded already, then yep. You know that...
Oh, but these are Ketanim.
No, then you know that Ketanim are... Like, female Ketanim are also... Excluded. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like, you could just think for one
from
the other, no?
Well, because Ketanim and Ketanos are also women, they're just younger.
Yeah, exactly.
So the only thing I would say is that whenever we include children in a mitzvah, it's not usually because children are chayiv in mitzvahs, correct? Children aren't chayiv in mitzvahs!
It's chinuch.
It's chinuch. So if it's chinuch, do you have to educate girls to do something that they'll be exempt for when they become women? That doesn't make any sense, right? Education means you get them involved in things now because they're going to be involved in it later. You want to make sure they know how to do it right. So if they're not going to have to do it later, there's no reason to educate them about it now. So, assumingly, it just means Ketana means the boys, right? Okay. Amar Mar. The master said, Ha Ezrach L'Hoytzias Anashim. You said, okay, that Ha Ezrach excludes women. L'Meimra. That teaches, that tells you, that is to say. The Ezrach, the word without a hey, just Ezrach, Bein Nashim Ben Gavri Mashma. That the word Ezrach would include everyone, male and female, correct? The hay excludes women. Without the hay, it is inclusive of men and women. Correct? Correct. Ve'hotanya. Ha-ha. But didn't we learn in a braisa? Ha-ezrach. Where does that word appear? Not by Sukkah, but we're talking about Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, what does it say by Yom Kippur? Anybody remember? It says, V'haysa lechem l'chukas olam b'chodesh ha-shvi. This shall be the law for you forever. On the seventh month, which is Tishrei, because we're counting from Nisan. Be'esor l'chodesh, on the 10th of Tishrei, that's Yom Kippur. Ta'anuas nafshay seichem, you shall afflict your souls. V'chol malacha loisa asu. You're not allowed to do any malacha. Ha-ezrach. And the ger, ha-gar b'sochachem. So when it says in that pasuk, the ezrach, who does it refer to? And there is, by the way, a hey. So we have a braisa that says, Ha-ezrach le-rabois es hanashim, includes the women. Ooh. So that's the opposite, that's the problem. Is that Ha-ezrach, we assumed until now, was an exclusion, because you're identifying only these and not somebody else, so we'll assume it's women. But here, it's including women, so the hey is including them. Seemingly.
There must be I feel like there's another source from that now.
You do feel like that?
Is there?
It could be the food you've been eating.
Seriously?
Yeah, no, we'll see in a second that it really depends. If we're going to view... The thing is, when you read this pasuk, it says, Ta'anu es nafsha yuseichem, afflict your souls. So what are you supposed to do? In other words, is this a mitzvah asay or a mitzvah los asay?
No, it's a mitzvah asay.
Asay? So fasting is active or passive?
It's an active.
Active thing? Not eating food is active?
Yeah, you have to choose not to eat it.
Right. You always have to choose not to violate something when you want to violate it. Every los asay is like that.
I already know that you're going
to
eat it.
So there's a little bit of a problem here. The presentation of this is in the positive. But it's obviously a negative. It means you're not allowed to, it's not allowed to, it's not allowed, you're not allowed, not allowed. There are five things you're not allowed to do, right? Whether this pasuk is referring to all of them, whatever. But, yeah? So on the one hand, it really is a los asay, but it's presented as an asay, which is interesting. So what do you do in that situation? If it was a los asay, women would be obligated. If it's an asay, then you can argue it's a mitzvah asay, shazman grama. Yeah? So the problem is, in this particular case, there is a mitzvah los asay, as we'll see. So there's like maybe an asay and a los asay, I don't know, we'll have to figure it out. But the bottom line is that women are basically obligated in Yom Kippur because of other psukim that talk about the los asay. So, all right, we'll let the Gemara speak for itself. So the Gemara started off by saying, Ha-ezrach excludes women, and then it says, what do you mean? But Ha-ezrach by Yom Kippur includes women.
I feel like there's another source for Yom Kippur.
Or yeah. Ha'ezrachios shechayavos be'inui, that it means those female guests or whatever you have you, members of Klal Yisrael, are obligated in this affliction. Alma, so you see from here, ezrach gabri mashma, that the word ezrach only refers to men. So it's just a contradiction, right? It's a contradiction. Amar Rabba. Rabba said, Hilchasaninhu, vasmechinu rabbanan akroi. Really, it's just an asmachta. What's just an asmachta? So we have two things going on here. We have the obligation of women in Yom Kippur, and we have the exemption of women in Sukkah. So it, in quotation marks, is really just a halach l'moshe Sinai. In other words, it's not really coming from the pasuk at all. Va'asmechin rabbanan akroi, and the rabbanan came along and pinned it on the pasuk. You can sort of see it in the pasuk, but the pasuk's not really saying it. The problem is, do you really do that in two different directions? Wait, which one is coming from the pasuk and which one's the halacha? So is it that ezrach includes men and women? Or ezrach is only in the men? Which one is the default here that the halacha l'moshe Sinai is coming to counter? Visu, and furthermore, kralamali. What do you need a pasuk for at all? Hilchasalamali. And what do you need a halacha l'moshe Sinai for? Come on. Ha-sukkah mitzas asei shazaman grama. Sukkah, obviously women are exempt because it's time caused. And any positive commandment that time causes, women are exempt. So what's going on by Sukkah for sure? Some sketch is going on over here. Yom Kippurim, Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Nafka. So Yom Kippur, we'll learn out from the statement of Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav. Right, nafka means we'll learn it out. It'll come out. To Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav V'chein Tana Devei Rav Yishmael Amar Kra. The pasuk says Ish a Isha. Asher Yasu Mikochatos. That there's another pasuk that says if you have a man or women that violate something, so they all get the same punishment. Don't think that men and women have different punishments or whatever it is. If they do the Avera, they all get the same punishment. If you have fancy Gemara, you'll have the pasuk on the side. Dabero b'nei Yisrael, isha isha ki yasu mikol chataosa adam. Man or woman that will do any of these sins, limo mal b'Hashem, v'ashma nefeshahi, they're guilty. And ultimately, says the Gemara, he shave hakasuf isha leish lecha'on shin sheba Torah. Equated the pasuk, woman to man, regarding all of the sins of the Torah. So, what are we saying? We're saying that we have this Mesorah, that based on this pasuk, men and women are all equal when it comes to all mitzvahs lo saseh. Yeah? All mitzvahs lo saseh, sure, for sure, all, at least when there's a punishment, or they all get the same punishment. Rashi says nothing. Rashi says on the bottom of the previous Amud, Yom HaKippurim lo saseh hu, v'kares hu. That Yom Kippur really is considered to be a lo saseh, and it's an lo saseh that has kares if a person violates it. V'chol mitzvah lo saseh, and whenever it comes to a prohibition, bein zman grama, bein lo zman grama, we don't care if it's caused by time. Nafkalan b'kiddushim revudu d'chayavu. So we learn out that women are obligated. So far what's happened in the Gemara? The Gemara doesn't understand from beginning to end what is going on over here. By sukkah, women should be excluded because it's a mitzvah aseh shasman grama. I don't need ezrach or a halacha l'moshe m'sinai to tell me that they're exempt. That's number one. Good? We don't need ha-ezrach or halacha l'moshe m'sinai to tell me something that I already know from a principle. Nashim are exempt from mitzvah aseh shasman grama. Okay. What about Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur der chayavos. Is that a chiddush? Ezrach! Ha-ezrach! Women are obligated in Yom Kippur. Obviously they are. Why? What are you talking about? Because it's a lo saseh. And there's a punishment called kares. And we know that men and women are all equal when it comes to that. So I don't need a pasuk or halacha l'moshe m'sinai there either. We all together? So the Gemara started off by trying to work out, how do you know women are exempt from sukkah? The answer is ha-ezrach. The Gemara said, how do you see it from ha-ezrach? The hey excludes women. The Gemara says, almost like a parenthetical question, really? I thought ezrach works in the opposite direction. That ezrach means only men. And that the hey, ha ezrach by Yom Kippur included women. So, can't have it both ways. And then the Gemara takes a full stop and says, what are you guys all talking about? By sukkah, it's a mitzvah asay shazman grama. By Yom Kippur, it's a lo saseh and women are equally obligated. I don't need any of this. I don't know what's going on, says the Gemara. What do you need halacha l'moshe m'sinai? What do you need ezrach for? None of this makes any sense. So how does the Gemara fix all of this? Amar Abaye. Abaye said, lo'olam sukkah hilchasa. Really, by sukkah, it's halacha l'moshe m'sinai that women are exempt. Okay, so Abaye is saying, really, it's a chiddush that women are exempt from sukkah. You would have thought, apparently, that they were chayavos. Why? It's a mitzvah atzei shasman grama. So Abaye needs to explain this stuff. So Abaye claims that we need a chiddush to say women are exempt from sukkah. It's darich, and it's necessary to have our halacha l'moshe m'sinai. Why? Sal kedai techamina would have occurred to me to say teishvu ke'ein taduru. We said a million times already. Besukos teishvu shivas yamim. You have to dwell in your sukkah for 7 days, and dwelling means the way you would live the rest of the year. So it's teishvu ke'ein taduru. Similar, just like you would live. So what does it do with us? So again, who's generally obligated to mitzvah aseh shasman grama? Only the men. So a man would have an obligation of living in the sukkah, but it's living in the sukkah how? In the normal fashion of the rest of the year. Most men live with their wives or without their wives? Well, normal healthy relationships, men live with their wives. Therefore, madira ishvishta, just like the rest of the year, dira, a person's living with man and woman together, husband and wife together, Av sukkah, so to sukkah ish v'ishtoi, also would have to be husband and wife together. So therefore, maybe just because of the man she would be obligated, or maybe she ends up with her own obligation because of that, Right? It's a little tricky. How do you learn this out? Women would have their obligation because the man has an obligation of teshvuke in Tadur? Or it means to say that once you see Basukas Teshu Shivas Yamim, we're forced to interpret this as not a typical mitzvah asay shazman grama, maybe? And therefore women have their own independent obligation? Do you hear what I'm asking? Is it that women are obligated because their husbands are obligated? And they have to be schlepped along? Is that what it is? They sort of get included back door? Because, well, their husband has to live normally, so she's got to be there. Is that what it is? Or is it that once you see that the nature of the mitzvah is living normally, so then women somehow also become included in that, and it's not like a typical mitzvah asay shazman grama or something like that. Do you at least hear the question I'm asking?
I guess.
Not so much? Why would women have been obligated according to what Abaye is saying?
Because it's normal for women to live in their houses during the year. We have a pasuk that says you have to live in the sukkah just like you dwell in the house. And so then... So
even though it's a mitzvah asay shazman grama... This mitzvah asay grama has to do with like living the rest of the year. And so what?
I'm not saying it's a good argument.
So the other way to look at it is that everyone agrees men are obligated in sukkah, right?
Yeah.
So if men are obligated in sukkah, how? In what way are they obligated in sukkah? The same way they live the rest of the year. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have to live with their wife. But if the wife is exempt from sukkah, is she going to be there?
No.
So then he'll never be able to fulfill his mitzvah sukkah. So she has to be obligated so he can fulfill his mitzvah sukkah properly.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it means?
I don't think so.
So that's a fascinating thing to think through. Okay. So that's what Abaye says, is that we would have thought that women are obligated because of the principle of teshvuk ein taduru. But they're not. How do you know? Halakha l'moshe misina. And we'll have to come back to what was this hay business. That's what's called an asmachta. So really, women, what? Should have been obligated. Start from scratch, base level. Sukkah is a mitzvah asay shazman grama, women should have been exempt. But this mitzvah asay shazman grama revolves around the principle of normal living. So women should have been obligated. Come ashmalan, halacha, Moshe Misinai comes along and says, don't make that mistake. So why are women exempt from sukkah? Because it's a mitzvah asay shazman grama? No, because teshvuk ein taduru would have mitigated it. So they're exempt because of halacha l'moshe misinai. If you need a pasuk to sort of pin it on, so then you can say ha'ezrach excludes women, but it's really halacha l'moshe misinai. That's what Abaye says. Rava Amar, it's tarich. You need it. Why? We saw before there are certain parallels between the chiyuv to eat matzah the first night and the chiyuv to eat in the sukkah the first night, remember? Because there's this connection between tesvav, tesvav. The first night of sukkah is the same night as the first night of Pesach. Therefore, there's a connection between the two. So just like women are obligated to eat matzah, even though matzah is what type of mitzvah asay? Shazman grama. Women are obligated to eat matzah. So you would have thought maybe they're also obligated to eat in the sukkah, to sleep in the sukkah, in the mitzvah of sukkah. So that's the kamash malan. Malahala nashim chayavos, afkan nashim chayavos. Just like over there by matzah, women are obligated. Afkan, so to here, nashim chayavos, women I would have thought are obligated. Kamash malan. That's Allah Moshe Misinai tells you no. So Abaye and Rav aren't crazy different. It's just a question of why we would have thought that women are obligated. Is it because of Teshuk Ein Taduru, or is it because of some sort of like Zera Shava type of thing?
Teshuk
Teshuk.
I like this answer, but
it
still doesn't commonly resolve our problem with Yom Kippur.
Nope. No, it does not. V'hashe da'amrit sukkah hilchasa. So now that you've told me that the reason why women are exempt from sukkah is halacha l'moshe misinai, Kralamali, what do you need a pasuk of Ezrach HaEzrach? What do you need HaEzrach HaExcludation for? What's that all about? So the answer is, it's just an asmachta. It's not really learned out from the pasuk. Well then, what's the hay doing there? Right? What is the hay doing there? Answers the Gemara, L'rabba is a sagirim. The hay includes, the hay includes also gerim. Wow, so now we're learning that the hay is inclusive, not exclusive. Salka daita chamina would have occurred to my mind to say, ha ezrach b'Yisrael amarachmana. It's only people that are referred to as an ezrach that the Torah says are obligated in Sukkah v'layas ha-geirim, not people that are converts. Come ashmalan. So it comes to teach you, ha ezrach, that even converts are included in the mitzvah of Sukkah. Okay, what about Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur mid Rav Yudah Marav Nafka. Yom Kippur, we know the women are obligated because of this statement of Rav that men and women are equal when it comes to all of the mitzvahs lo sasei of the Torah. So why in the world do I need a halacha l'moshe Sinai or a pasuk to teach me that women are obligated? Loi nitzracha, it's not necessary, ela except the tosefes inui, for what's called tosefes inui, the additional affliction. What does that mean? So you know how everybody lights Neiros Shabbos 18 minutes before Shabbos? Why?
Gedder.
Yeah, it's just a fence like all the other ones, right? Guess again.
What? It's not Gedder?
I mean, it is of sorts, but not really. It's because we hold there's a concept of Tosefes Shabbos. That there's a mitzvah to add on to Shabbos. Not to wait to the last minute and start Shabbos when it starts.
Can you add on at the end?
Also at the end, in the beginning and the end. So we hold there's a mitzvah Tosefes Shabbos. Everyone agrees there's a mitzvah, you ready for this, of Tosefes Yom HaKippurim. Wow. Tosefes Shabbos is a little easier. Tosefes Yom Kippur means you have to flip yourself longer. So that's that everybody holds to this. Even the Rambam is the only one the Rambam really meant. Rambam doesn't mention Tosefes Shabbos, but the Rambam does mention Tosefes Yom HaKippurim. So I would have thought, listen, women are obligated in the suffering of Yom Kippur, because it's a low sase. But adding on to it is not one of those things that's punishable with kares. So maybe men and women are only equated when there's like a specific punishment. But if there's no specific punishment, then maybe men and women are not equated. And therefore women would be obligated on Yom Kippur with the sufferings, but not the additional ones before Yom Kippur begins. Maybe there's no halach of Tosefes Yom HaKippurim for them. So answers the Gemara, good thought process. Wrong. Kamash Malan, that there's a halacha Moshe Sinai, or a pasuk, that teaches you that women are also obligated in Tosefes Yom HaKippur. So that's what it says. Again, read it inside again. Yom HaKippur and Rav Yudah Amar Rav Nafka. In Kippur, we should have learned out from the statement of Rav that men and women are obligated in all of the punishments of the Torah. Le'nitzrach ela Tosefes Inui. It's only necessary for adding on to the suffering. Sakadai Tichamino would have occurred to me to say, Hoyol mi rachman le tosefes inui, me oinesh u me azahara, lo nischai bin Hashem klal, kamash malan. Hoyol umi rachmana, since the Torah excluded le tosefes inui, the additional suffering, me oinesh u me azahara, from punishment, and from being a lo sasei, since the additional sufferings, adding on to them, before Yom Kippur begins, is not punishable with karis, and is not a lo sasei. Lo nischayvu nashim klal, the women are not obligated in it at all. Kamash malan, comes to teach you the pasuk, or the lechem shem Sinai, that they are obligated. Okay, so what the Gemara just did, was when it started off by saying, how do you know that women are exempt from Sukkah? It didn't answer by saying it's a mitzvah asei shazman grama. Why not? Machlokas abaye v'rava. There's some reason, either teshuva gein taduru, or tesvav, that should have taught us women are actually, what?
Exempt.
Exempt or obligated? Are actually obligated. So it comes along, halacha moshe misinai, hinted to in the pasuk, or pinned on the pasuk, to teach you that they really are exempt, even though there's reason to say they shouldn't be. And Yom Kippur is the opposite. That Yom Kippur, obviously, that women are obligated in fasting and everything on Yom Kippur, but there's a Tosefes Inui, and maybe they should have been exempt from that. Kamash Milan, that they're chayev even in that. Amar Mar. Kol. What is the word kol for? Kol, the rabbis is a ketanim. Kol includes the children. V'had tanam, didn't we learn in a mission that Yashan v'adam ketanim peturin minasuka? Our Mishnah said women and slaves and children are exempt from Sukkah, not Chayav in Sukkah. But what does it mean? Kol includes the Ketanim. Leikasha, that's not a question. Kan bekatan shigia lechinuch, kan bekatan shilegia lechinuch. Our Mishnah is talking about a katan that's not of the educable age yet. And when we say kol includes ketanim, it means once they're old enough to be educated. Katan shigia lechinuch, midirabbanon, who? Midirabbanon, v'kra, asmachta ba'almahu. So how do you read this? A katan that's already of the educable age, midirabbanon, who? Is obligated on a rabbinic level, but not on a d'oraisa level, right? Did anybody ever hear of an obligation that a katan has, which is only education, but he's obligated? What? If it's, make up your mind. If a katan can be chayiv in mitzvos, so then the pasuk is fine. If a katan, because he has no das, cannot be obligated in mitzvos, so then what in the world is going on over here? So the Gemara assumes that a katan can only be obligated midirabbanan to be educated. Good? Katan can only be obligated midirabbanan to be educated. So what do you do with the pasuk? More answers, you're right, midirabbanan, he's only obligated rabbinically to cross machta ba'almahu. The cross is just a way to remember it. In case you're wondering, you want to remember katanim? It says kol. Oh. So what do you need it for? Kol doesn't really include anything? Doesn't really include anything according to that, right? Okay. Rashi. Asmachta ba'almaninhu. It's like almost right in the middle of the page. Do you see it? It says, katan shigia lechinuch, and it says, asmachta ba'almaninhu. Right, what's the problem? The problem is, if we're really saying that the word kol doesn't really include children, because children are really only midrabbanan for education, for chinuch, so what do you do with the word kol in the pasuk, right? How do you... I mean, it's including something, no? Rashi says, v'kra l'Rabbi Eliezer. The pasuk goes like Rabbi Eliezer that we saw before. K'diyis and the rabbi is gersh and iskayer bin time v'kan shigid al da'oisim sukkah v'cholish al mayed. Do you remember this? We said a sukkah stage shivas yamim, or chagah chuzitas v'chish yamim, that you have to have a sukkah for all 7 days. And then Rabbi Eliezer held, there's no such thing as building a sukkah in the middle of sukkahs. Unless it fell down, okay, then there's a lot to talk about. But you can't have a sukkah that's not made for 7 days. Oh, so what about the person? What if the person wasn't obligated in sukkahs all 7 days? He converted in the middle of sukkahs. Or a katan that became a gadol in the middle of sukkahs. Rabbi Eliezer says, oh, that's a problem. That's why we have a pasuk, kol. Kol includes those people. Yeah? So Rashi filled in a very important blank for us that the Gemara left us wondering. Rashi's saying, no, because you have to remember other Gemaras that you learned. Okay. The Mishnah said, when exactly is a katan obligated in the midst of sukkah? Do you remember? When he doesn't need his mother anymore. I'm going to introduce this with a Maaseh Shehayah last night. Maaseh Shehayah last night. I was trying to sleep. And I hear her coming from the room, my youngest. Ima! Ima! Mm-hmm. Yes, what do you want? Ima, come here! Okay, just tell me what you want. Just tell me to come here! Okay. So when it says, a katan that no longer needs his mother is obligated in sukkah. Okay, that's chinuch, right? That's called, apparently, he's of the age that you can educate him. Heichi dami katan shenitzarech l'imoy. What is similar, meaning what exactly, does it mean a katan that doesn't need his mother anymore? Because most people still need their mothers, even when they're in college, right, guys?
Yeah.
Still need your mom. Right. Okay, so what does it mean you don't need your mother anymore? Amri de Rabbi Yonai kol shenifne ve'ein imoy mekan chasoy. Anyone who goes to the bathroom and his mother doesn't wipe him anymore, he can wipe himself. If you can wipe yourself, you can sit in the sukkah.
He's all German up.
Rishonai mer kol shenayor mishnah so. Anyone who wakes up from his sleep, ain't a koira, ima, ima. Whoever wakes up in the middle of the night doesn't cry out for his mother, so that's the one that is no longer needing of his mother. Gemara says gedolim nami karu, but there are older children also that still do that. Ela ema kol shenayar ve'ena kara ima ima. What I thought somebody just said. So okay, so it's a little bit of a girsa issue. You see the brackets, whatever. The bottom line is that what the Gemara means to say is that sometimes you'll have a kid that he's an older kid. He wakes up in the middle of the night. He cries for his mother. But if his mother doesn't answer him, what does he do? Goes back to sleep. Whatever. He realizes she's not coming. Whatever. She's sleeping. Whatever. You know, he has a thought, certain thought process that he knows. Like, he should just go back to sleep. And then there is another type of cotton that wakes up in the middle of the night and when he doesn't hear his ima, it just makes him scream louder. Ima! And he will not stop. He's just going to scream basically the rest of the night. Either he's going to pass out, but he doesn't have the thought process yet that, like, his mother is not coming. You know, I should just go back to sleep. So it's indicative of a certain maturity on the part of the katan. Okay, so that is the age when he's no longer needing of his mother. Either the age he can wipe himself, or the age where he realizes his mother is not coming, and he goes back to sleep. Ma'isa b'yodek alasa shashamai. So here's a problem. The Mishnah said there was a ma'isa shahaya where Shammai's daughter-in-law gave birth, right? And what did it say? What did he do? Remember? What did he do? He undid like the plaster or whatever covers the beams of the house, and he put schach on top of. So someone read me this carefully. What did the Mishnah actually say? Well, can we read it carefully? Maisa, there was an incident. And the daughter-in-law of Shammai Hazaken gave birth. Upiches is a maziva. So he took off, the roof, the plaster, whatever. V'sichech al gabe hamita. He put schach on top of the bed. Bishvil katan. For the katan. For the katan. Now, you know, I always do this to you, right? What am I going to ask you?
Why does it say katan when you're just born?
Yeah, but what's my general question I always ask you whenever we learn anything? Just it's like a process of checks and balances. So, if you want to know if this Mishnah makes sense, ask yourself, how would... Come on. Yes. How would you have written this? So you tell me. There was an incident with Shammai Hazaken where his daughter-in-law gave birth. So he undid the roof and put schach on top of what? Okay, or on top of the kid. So you'll say, well, that doesn't make sense because it's really on top of his bed, his crib. And he put schach on top of the bed because of... It doesn't even say the katan, it just says bishvil katan. So it does seem a little strange, right? There's something linguistically a little bit odd about this phrase. But okay, be that as it may, the way every single one of us reads this Mishnah is that Shammai put the schach on top of the baby's bed. Correct? Okay. So the Gemara says, Maise v'yalda kalase v'chule, etc. Maise listor. What's Maise listor? We had this before. Was it Maise listor? What listor? Stira. Contradiction, right? Stira literally means to break something, right? Binyan and stira are opposites. Binyan is to build, stira is to destroy. Maise listor is an incident that's being brought to contradict, to destroy the point. You don't do that, right? Mishnayos don't bring incidents to destroy the points that were made. They bring incidents to... Let me ask you a question. Why would a Mishnah ever say Maise Shahaya? Doesn't the Mishnah just tell you the halacha? Why would a Mishnah ever quote a Maise? Ever? And they do it pretty frequently, right? So what do you think? Why would a Mishnah ever quote a Maise? What point? What does it add?
That some time you consider this
Well, usually, I'm saying in this case, it's a problem. But the typical case, the reason why a Mishnah would quote a Maise is because the Mishnah wants you to know that people actually did it. This is not just like a theoretical thing, but this was actually paskined. It was actually done by people. Yeah? So anytime you have a Mishnah that says a halacha, the Maise is supposed to flesh out, and by the way, it really happened. People really relied on this. That makes a lot of sense, especially if it's a kula. Yeah? Okay, so Maisel Istor, the incident contradicts. How so? How does it contradict? What was the halacha of the Mishnah and what is the Maisa? Somebody tell me. What was the halacha of the Mishnah? Then they're chayiv in sukkah.
Right.
And Shammai.
And Shammai, the kid was just born and he did it.
So what's going on? It contradicts the age, right? I thought that a katan is exempt until he's not tzarich l'imo anymore. And then he's old enough to be educated, right? So the Gemara answers, chasuri mechasra b'chir katani. What's chasuri mechasra? It's missing something. The Mishnah is missing a line. B'chir katani, and this is how it should teach. This is how it should read. Vishamai, and even though a katan isn't obligated until he no longer needs his mother, Shammai was machmir. He was extra strict. Umaisinami v'yolda kalasa shel Shammai. There was an incident, by the way, that his daughter-in-law gave birth. And he put schach on top of the bed because of the katan. Good? So Shammai was machmir on the age of chinuch. Are you guys okay with this?
Yep.
I am not okay with this. This doesn't make any sense.
Same thing, no.
I mentioned it yesterday when we read the Mishnah for the first time, but think it through for a minute. What is chinuch? What is chinuch?
Teaching children.
So is there any value in putting schach on top of a baby? Wait, are you trying to reinterpret the Mishnah?
I'm just reading the words.
Okay, so the question is, does everyone at least appreciate the question? It's like an obvious question. You start to think about it. What do you mean Shammai was machmir? Machmir on what? Machmir on education?
Yeah.
There's no such thing called being machmir on education when the kid doesn't even know what you're doing.
You don't know what age he is.
He was just born.
Where does it say that?
You mean she gave birth 4 years ago? Then why is it relevant?
I don't know.
Okay, let's work this out, please. When did Shammai take a vote? When did Shammai's daughter-in-law give birth? Right before Sukkot, or on Sukkot, or like years ago?
Who knows? How do we know?
Come on. Why would it be relevant if it was years ago?
Then why does it say katan?
Because he's a katan.
If he's such a baby, then why say tino?
So what's the question?
The question is, the Mishnah reads, and this is what the Gemara seems to have just said, right? That the rule is a katan that no longer needs his mother has to be in a sukkah. But that's halacha chinuch, education. Halacha chinuch, once he can either wipe himself or he doesn't keep crying for his mother the whole night, he's chayav to be educated in the mitzvah of sukkah. What does that mean? It means he's old enough, he's of the age that he's intellectually mature enough to appreciate what it means a sukkah. Now why does it have to do with this specific example of wiping himself or whatever? I don't know. But apparently that's the age when he's mature enough to appreciate the sukkah. Shammai was machmir. And he went ahead and put schach on top of the baby that was just born. And the Gemara says, that's right, it was a chumrah. What's the chumrah? What do you mean a chumrah? If the kid is not educable, he doesn't understand that he's in a sukkah, then you did nothing.
A baby is technically educable. For example, if you speak to your children when they're like a year old,
yes.
Five languages, they can learn 5 languages.
Yeah, but he's a new...
Okay, you can educate him into sounds. But is he going to know anything about the mitzvah of sukkah when he gets older?
He's going to remember sitting in the sukkah.
He's going to remember sitting in the sukkah. His brain hasn't even synapsed very much. The nerves are not totally innervated, but he will remember the sukkah.
Subconsciously, I think.
Okay, so Adam wants to go with a subconscious explanation that, okay, so we got to research this psychologically, do some experimental psychology here, and see if there's any truth.
No, memory doesn't even occur until he's 3 years old, so how could it be a newborn?
So we have a technical problem here.
It's a psychological thing.
We make ourselves think that we remember back, all the way back that far, but we only remember to a certain point when our brains develop.
Oh, you had a test on it. How did you do? Before you answer this question, we trust you. How did you do?
I got that question right.
Okay, good. So that's a sketchy answer to suggest that subconsciously the kid doesn't, he really is educable. So there are achronim who suggest that in a Hanami, there are a few answers. The easiest answer, and this is the sketchiest perhaps, is that when the Gemara said, Kol l'rabo sisa ketanim, finish the sentence, we said that's just an asmachta. But Shammai Zaken took it seriously. And he thought that mamish, for some reason, by sukkah, ketanim or mamish chai of the raisa. That's the chumrah of Shammai. Why is that a chumrah? It's not a chumrah. That would be a din. He learned it differently. It's not a chumrah. So there are others that learn it like this. They go back to the Mishnah and they say, like we pointed out, that the Mishnah itself is strange, right? Because it's the katan and the baby. Who did he put tzchach on top of? So think about it like this. Shammai's daughter-in-law gave birth. So she was going to be anywhere near the sukkah?
No.
No. She's going to be in bed for a few days, recovering, and the baby's going to be with her. Does she have any other children?
No. Yes.
Yes. She has a katan.
Wait.
So where's that katan going to be if mommy is stuck in bed in the house?
In the house.
Well, if he's tzarech le'imo, eino tzarech le'imo. So you have to go back to that. If he's eino tzarech le'imo, so then it doesn't make a difference that she's in the house. He doesn't need her. He'll be in the sukkah. What if he's tzarech le'imo still? So then he's going to be by his mother. So the ma'aseh shehaya, because so if you accept this pshat, so then what the Mishnah means to say is that because his daughter-in-law gave birth, she was stuck at home, and the child that is not the age that's eino tzarech le'imo, he's still tzarech le'imo, but Shammai had a chumra in the shi'ur of tzarech le'imo. He felt that when the kid still needs his mother a little bit, he still is chayav in sukkah. So in this particular case, since the cotton is stuck because his mother is in bed, so he had no choice but to put the schach on top of the kid's bed. And he had a chumrah in the shi'ur of Eino Tzarech Le'imo. You hear?
So there was or there wasn't a newborn?
There was, but that's not relevant. It's only relevant because that's the reason why the other kid she had, the other boy she had, the cotton, wasn't going to be sleeping in the sukkah.
I mean, my Gemara could be wrong, but when it says here at the end, this year, it says the beams over the bed for the newborn minor. What is
so,
newborn minor?
So if you want to take that approach, then you're going to have to explain how Shammai can hold that a baby that's just been born has a mitzvah of chinuch. So Adam suggested a subconscious pshat. I suggested a posuk pshat. Kol includes ketanim. And Shammai is like, took that very seriously. We rejected Adam's pshat because we don't think it's correct, actually, in psychology. We rejected my pshat because then the Gemara said it's a chumrah. And that's not a chumrah. That's a pasuk. So if Shammai learned it as a pasuk, then the Gemara shouldn't call it a chumrah. He should have said that was me, correct then. So then what is the best answer that we have so far? Unless you can come up with any better? Is the answer some of the achronim give, which is based on the discrepancy in the linguistics of the Mishnah. That Yalda Kalase Shoshana, she had a baby which is a newborn. And he was Mesachek on the bed, not even the crib or anything, on the bed, Bishvil Katan, because of a Katan, not a Tinok. So the suggestion is that she had another child. But if she had another child, then why is it relevant to say that she just gave birth? So the answer is because that accounts for why the Katan wasn't in the Sukkah. Because let her go to the Sukkah. If Shammai cares so much about this kid, he's still Tzarech Le'imo. But Shammai had a chumrah in the age of the child, it's chayav in chinuch. So let the mother sleep in the sukkah or be nearby or something like that. So the answer is in this particular case, she couldn't because she had just given birth. So she's stuck in bed. So that accounts for why this child was not in the sukkah. He had to be in the house. Well, if he had to be in the house, what are you going to do? He's chayav in sukkah, held Shammai, because he had a chumrah in the age of chinuch. So he had to take apart the ceiling and put schach on top of the kid. Interesting chat, right? And that would help us out to read the Gemara and the Mishnah. Okay. Let's go a little bit right there so that we can try to finish this up tomorrow. Mishnah. Kol shivas hayamim. Adam ha'isis yukas ha'kiyama ba'isir ha'ra'i. This is pretty straightforward stuff. The Mishnah says all 7 days of sukkah, so a person is supposed to make his sukkah keva, like that's his permanent house, like that's where he finds himself, his default. Ba'isir ha'ra'i. And his house is where he travels to, you know, it's a... what's a good word for that? I like default. So his house is no longer the default of his location. His default house is now the sukkah, and his house is the opposite. Whatever. What?
Temporary.
Yeah, no, temporary, yeah. It was a default. Anyway. Yardi Bishamim, it rained. Me'eos emutu lefanes. From when, at what point, is he allowed to turn and depart the sukkah? Mishetisrach ha-mikvah. From the time that his food spoils. Sarach is to spoil. Mikvah is some sort of type of dish. Rashi says, if it's not too soft and not too thick, that's what it refers to. So it's like not a very thick thing. It's also not a very liquidy thing.
Congeal.
Okay, yeah, congeal. At that point, he's allowed to leave the sukkah. So let's just pause it for 1 second. So halacha lemaisa, what is the story? When is a person allowed to leave the sukkah and go inside?
So the
Mishnah gave us a shiur, right?
Right.
Does that actually have to happen? Like, what if you're not eating a food like that? You hear a question I'm asking? When the Mishnah says there's a certain amount of rain that you're allowed to leave the sukkah, is that because that's just an objective shiur? Once it rains like that, you're allowed to go in? What if you're not eating anything like that? Are you still allowed to go in? So there are basically two approaches to this. But Pashup Shat in the Mishnah, if you're a betting man, it sounds like you don't have to be eating it. But that's the shiur from the rain that you're allowed to go in? Why is it based on that? Why not just based on it's unpleasant to you? Is it based on mitzvah? Is it based on it's not a sukkah anymore because you're in vain? You know, you're suffering in it? Or is this a different concept altogether? So a little bit of an open question. But, okay, so that's the mission sense. You're allowed to go in from the point that this not-so-soft, not-so-hard food gets spoiled. Mashal mashal another redundant. It's given a mashal, an analogy. What is it similar to when it rains and you leave the sukkah? You're allowed to leave the sukkah. Le'eved shebalim zekais l'rabot. To a slave that goes to pour a cup for his master. V'shafar le'kitan al-panav, and he poured the pitcher on his face. Who poured the pitcher on whose face? Wait, meaning the person that leaves the sukkah because it rained, he's like pouring the pitcher on the person he's supposed to be serving? Or it means that the master poured the pitcher back on the person that's serving him? So who's who over here in the mashal? Rashi writes, "Uba gemara mefarish mi shafach lemi." Gemara explain who poured on who. So Gemara says, "Tana Rabbana, Rabbi said you're supposed to make your sukkah your default." The rabbis taught koshivas yamim ala moesis sukkasei kavoy sarai that your sukkah is the default and your house is temporary. Keitzad. So let's be practical. How does it work? Hayel keilim noyim. You have beautiful vessels. Whether it means chairs, whether it means plates, whatever, there's all kinds of vessels. Mal in the sukkah. You're supposed to bring them to the sukkah. That's the ideal. The ideal is that you treat your sukkah like your house. So all of your proper, beautiful things, you're supposed to bring them up to the sukkah. Again, the Mishnah always expresses it in Brisa as up, because typically in those days, they had their sukkahs on the roofs. Matzos notes, you have all kinds of sheets and spreads and blankets, whatever it's going to be, that are very nice. Malin the sukkah, you bring them up to the sukkah. You eat, you drink, you metayel. Nowadays, I think we would translate, well, metayel means what to you, right? So you don't want a teal in your sukkah, so we would probably call it chilling. So you eat, you drink, you chill. Basukkah, in a sukkah. So that's just a brisa's refleshing out some practicalities. What does it mean that you're supposed to make it your default? Meaning, you live in it, like you live in your house, right? These are just some practical, concrete examples. Minoa hanei mile. How do you know that? How do you know that? The Tanya Rabbanan, because the rabbis taught Teishu Kein Tanduru. Right? Again, the same passage we've spoken a million times. You're supposed to live in your sukkah. What does it mean, live? Live and make it the way you live the rest of the year. Mikan Amru, so from here they said, Kol Shiva Sayyamim Adam Sukkah Saikeva. For those 7 days, a person has to make his sukkah his permanent place, his default. But basically, all right, and his house is temporary. Ketzah. Hayelu Kelim Noyim Malin the Sukkah. If he has beautiful things, bring them up to the sukkah. So his nose, beautiful blankets, sheets, whatever, mount on the sukkah. Eats and drinks, he chills in the sukkah. Mishanim the sukkah. And this one adds, and he learns in the sukkah. Mishanim the sukkah. He learns Torah the sukkah. Ini, how could that be? But Amar Rabba. But didn't Rabba say Mikra? What's Mikra? Chumash, Tanakh. Umasna, meaning Mishnah. Vimitalalasa, in the sukkah. So you're supposed to learn Chumash and Mishnayos in the sukkah, b'tanui, but anything which is Gemara, bar mitalalasa, you at least are allowed to do outside the sukkah. Now, there are two ways to look at this, right? One way to look at it is that, well, let's finish the Gemara a little bit today. But what the Gemara uses is a contradiction, because the Bryce has said you're supposed to learn in the sukkah. And here, we see that it depends. Mikra Mishnah in a sukkah.
He's not saying that you're not allowed to learn one sukkah.
Okay, that's what we need to discuss.
You're allowed to learn it.
Okay, hold on 1 second. So Gemara says, isn't that a contradiction? And Rav says, no, loikasha. Ha, b'megares, ha b'iyudin. It depends on what you're doing. If you want to just be megares, which means to make it fluent in your mouth, to memorize things and to make you give yourself like the knowledge, or you're fluent in the daf, so that's okay. But the yunei, to actually go b'iyun, so then you at least don't have to do it in the sukkah. So when our Bryce has said you're supposed to learn in the sukkah, it seems to be talking not about just mikra mishnah, but yeah, even Gemara, if you're just going over to get the shakal v'tari clear, that's fine. But to actually be ma'ayin, so that you either shouldn't or don't have to do in the sukkah. Where it says ki ha, the Rav Mechanama, ki avu kaimei mekamei de Rav Chista, mariti be Gemara v'hali adade v'hadar ma'ainei v'svara. At first they would run through the Gemara together, and then they would be ma'ayin in svara. They would go deeper and delve deeper into it. So in other words, the first time you learn the Gemara, you have to just get the basic Shabbataria clear. And once you have Shabbataria clear, then you can start doing more of the Eim. So the running through it to just get Shabbataria clear, that also is fine, that you should do in the Sukkah. But once it becomes something that's more complicated, so then you do it outside the Sukkah. So there are basically two mahalim one could suggest to this. One approach is what Yehuda said, you don't have to do it in the Sukkah. Why? Because in general, as we all know, when you want to go ahead and really focus on something, it's much harder to do it when you're like in a closed space. Yeah, do you feel this way? When you're just like going over something, you want to memorize it. Sometimes it's even easier to just be like, I don't know, like those cubbies in the library, you know? You lock yourself in, you just like kind of go over to getting it and just memorize it. But isn't it true that when we all are really thinking about something, we like to walk around, we like to maybe get some fresh air, yeah? You ever see these people wandering on the basement energy room with their thumbs? They're trying to like work something out. When you're working something out, a lot of times maybe you have a conversation, let's go for a walk and talk it out. The fresh air, it helps a person to think. To be stuck and confined in one place is not so conducive to the depth. Maybe fine to just chaz or something, but it's not good to go in depth. So that's the Gemara saying, that you don't have to do that in a sukkah because it's detrimental to the Torah. So to be able to do Mishnayos and just some chumash, whatever, that you should do in a sukkah because it's not detrimental to your learning. But once it's going to be something, it's heavy duty, iyun, so then you don't have to do it in the sukkah because it's detrimental to the Torah. There is one other way, perhaps, to look at it, which is that maybe you're not allowed to do it in your sukkah. Anybody want to try to make this argument? Why might one suggest that you're not allowed to learn the iyun in a sukkah? What might be the problem? So this goes back to the idea that, you know, it's the Mishnah Berurah mentions it, not in this context, but when you sit down into the sukkah, are you supposed to be thinking anything? There are a few times, well, let's take one step back for a second. There's something called Tameh HaMitzvos, right? Reasons for mitzvahs. So if you're doing a mitzvah and you don't know the reason for the mitzvah, is it a problem for your being yotzei the mitzvah? You're wearing tzitzis today, right? Do you know the reason for tzitzis? Are you? So you say, yeah. Patzik says, Laman Tizkaru. I'm supposed to remember all of the mitzvahs, no? How much do you have to have that in mind to be yotzei in the mitzvah? So the Bach has something so interesting that he says. He says, you know, sometimes the Torah says lema'an. Like in this case, by tzitzis. Lema'an tizikiru v'asisem, right? So whenever the Torah actually says a reason, the Bach suggests that you have to keep it in mind. Does sukkah have a reason? Says the Ananiya covered, sukkah is mamash. Where does all of that come from? What pasuk is it? Lema'an. Yedu doroseichem, kibas sukkos o shaftias b'nei Yisrael. So all the generations will know that you were in sukkos. What do we use that for in Amud Aleph? Beis Amud Aleph, what do we use that pasuk for? That's what we say, right, I think. You have to know you're in a sukkah, meaning can't be higher than 20 amos. You have to know you're in a sukkah. The Bach says, yeah, you have to know you're in a sukkah. You have to know that sukkah represents something. He takes it a step further than Beis Amud Aleph. That's the claim of the Bach. If you accept the Bach, can you learn this Gemara along those lines? Whenever you're doing something that doesn't require heavy-duty thought, then it's not a problem to do it in a sukkah because you know you're in a sukkah. But if your mind is so caught up because you're learning so be'iyun, then what? Then you can't remember you're in a sukkah. You're too focused. And if your consciousness is removed from the sukkah, then you're not fulfilling the mitzvah. So how could you do that? You're like breaking your sukkah. Is it a problem? I don't know. But at least you're allowed to learn outside the sukkah, according to everybody. But the svara I'm saying to you, I'm just suggesting to you, is that if you hold that a person does have to have a degree of consciousness by sukkah, because it says laman, so then you can understand why maybe it would be detrimental to your sukkah to actually learn the iyun in the sukkah. Because you're actually in a sukkah and failing to fulfill it. Yeah? So that's an interesting, just an interesting approach. So let's just finish the two dots. It's just another couple of lines and we'll call it a day. Amar Rava, Mani Mishisaya Metalalasa, Mani Michla Bar Metalalasa. So Ma'ane means kelim. Dishes, you know, things like that. So dishes, Mishtaya, what's Shisiya? Drinking. Any cups or anything like that used for drinking, bimetalalasa, are in the sukkah. Meaning you can leave them there. You can leave them in the sukkah. Mani, michla, but kelim used for oichel, bar mimtalalasa. They have to be taken out, they have to be removed from the sukkah. What's going on over here? So the basic gist is that we want the sukkah to be a place, Rashi writes, mani, michla, ka'aros la'achar sha'achlu bohen, tzarech lahotzion. Chutz l'sukkah. He doesn't explain much. That it's you know, it's gross. It's things you wouldn't want leaving around. I mean, has it ever happened to you? Like you're sitting at your table on Shabbos and like it's just full of like dirty plates or whatever. And like, oh, let's bench. Like it feels like not so nice, right? It's like gross. Like all schmutzy stuff. So sukkah also. We don't want those things to stay in the sukkah. You want to clear out the sukkah. When you eat. But then when the plates are finished, you should clear the sukkah out. But cups or whatever, they're not disgusting. So you can leave all those in the sukkah. That's not a problem. Chatzva v'shachil. What's chatzva v'shachil? Rashi writes, chatzva, kad shel cheres sheshoavin bo amayim. What's a kad shel cheres? A pitcher made out of cheres. Is cheres? Earthenware, clay, yeah. Sheshoavin bo amayim. What's she'ivas mayim? Drawing water, yeah. So in other words, in the Alten taste, this is the actual thing they drew the water with. And what's a shachil? Dali shel eitz. A pail, a wooden pail. So in other words, these are not things that are used for eating and drinking. These are things that are used to draw the water, you know, this is the big bucket of whatever it is. So chatz v'shchil, bar metalalasa, they're supposed to be outside the sukkah. Meaning, I guess if you need to pour in the sukkah, I guess you bring them in, but then you don't leave them there, you take them out. V'shraga v'metalalasa, but a regular candle, even though it's made out of cheres, those you are allowed to leave in the sukkah. For Amrila, bar mitalalasa, and some said, nope, you have to take it out. But look, pligi, but they're not arguing. Why not? Habasukkah gedola, habasukkah ketana. It depends on if you have a sukkah gedola or a sukkah ketana. Rashi says, sukkah ketana, shashir mitzumsam, but it's exactly 7x7, so these are things you're not allowed to leave in there. But if it's bigger than that, there's not a problem to leave in there. Now, generally speaking, in those days, these old types of candles that were made out of clay, so they got gross. They became like pretty filthy and gross. So it's okay, but it's your candle. You're going to use it again at night, whatever. So if it's a very small sukkah, you got to take it out. But if it's a normal size sukkah, so that's not a problem to leave in. Halacha l'maisa, when it comes to sukkah, so what we try to do and what it says in Shulchan Aruch is that you want to try to not bring so many serving things into the sukkah. You don't want things to be, you know, in other words, if you were in a restaurant, so whatever they would bring out to you in a restaurant, that's great to do in the sukkah. But whatever would stay in the kitchen, it's best to keep those in the kitchen and not to at least keep them in the sukkah. So like what you try to do in my sukkah is always try that the plates get served, you know? Some places you eat for Shabbos, right? They give you your plate with food on it, you know? Minig America is that all the food goes on the table and everybody kind of just serves themselves continuously, you know? But a lot of European traditions were that people were served a plate of food. So, okay, so in general, you know, do what you would normally do at your Shabbos table. But anything you wouldn't normally bring to the Shabbos table, also you should not bring to the sukkah. Go ahead.